Hi, this is Dr. Carrie Kerr-McAvoy. Thank you so much for joining me on this episode of Breaking Free from Narcissistic Abuse. Today we're going to take a closer look at why do we focus on the victims of abuse and not do more discussion of the abusers. But before we get into that and listening to the live TikTok on March 18th, be sure to like and follow this podcast so you don't miss future episodes. So let's listen in on this discussion of abuse and why our focus is in the direction that it is. Hey, good afternoon on a Friday. How are you doing? It's a lovely, kind of cool day in Texas today. But today I want to talk about why we focus on victims of narcissistic abuse instead of the perpetrators, instead of the abusers themselves. I just heard another video, another TikToker talking about the importance of viewing change from the perspective of what you can do yourself. In other words, whether or not you're externally focused, hoping that something's going to happen in the relationship versus focusing on the relationship and the damage being done in the relationship. I have a very big problem with this. And by the way, I'm a licensed psychologist with over 20 years of counseling experience. And this is something I didn't know until recently. So I used to be in that former camp. So I understand the bias, because when victims come into the office, you can only work with whoever's in the office. You can't change somebody who's not in there. You can tell the person who's complaining about the problems, things that they can try, but you can't really address a person who's not there. So I understand the bias that counseling has and why it puts the pressure on the person who's saying something is wrong. But what the field is failing to understand, what the world is failing to understand is that certain types of situations are not simply he said, she said, we're just not getting along, or they said. It is actually something even criminally is happening to one person, and they're coming in and saying, please help me, something is terribly going wrong, something is terribly wrong with our situation. And what the response up to now has been, well, you're probably not understanding correctly, you probably are bringing your piece to the problem, you're probably exaggerating, it can't really be that bad. There's all sorts of things that we do that silence people who are saying there is something catastrophically going wrong. And the thing that's alarming about this, it's becoming at an epidemic portion. You know, I know that it's very common for people to say, push back on narcissistic abuse by two big ways. One is they're saying, well, you're not a clinician, so you can't diagnose someone. Well, we're not describing a diagnosis, we're describing a set of behaviors. And yes, it's being called narcissistic abuse, but not just narcissists do this. Abusive people do it. Sociopaths do it. Immature people do it. There's lots of people who do it, not just narcissists. The second problem is that we end up minimizing the damage being done by pointing the direction at the victim instead of seeing this as a systemic problem, as a problem of the culture that's been probably going on for a long time, but we're just now bringing attention to it. And we're also, here's the thing that really upset me when I got a hold of it. One of the main complaints, and this has come out of research, Sandra Brown's research with 600 research participants out of Purdue University, found that the biggest complaint people in pathological love relationships had was cognitive dissonance. They didn't use that word. They didn't probably don't even know what that word means. But they felt distressed. They felt paralyzed. They couldn't make a decision. And she found, and they're finding, that actually cognitive functioning is being diminished. There is actually a decline in cognitive functioning. Their executive decision-making skills are showing deterioration, and the brain is showing changes. It's real. That's what I'm saying. It's real. It's not that I just don't like him. He's just not nice to me, or she's mean to me. No, there's actually a change in brain functioning. And here's the scary part. They currently don't know what to do about it. There is no research, there is no technique to reduce the impact of cognitive dissonance. Now, why do we not know about this? Why is there, do you, how much money has been poured into male-enhancing performance medication? A lot. Is that causing cognitive dysfunction in males or in their partners? No. It's just causing a loss of quality of life, right? But we're talking actual devastation, real damage being done to human beings. And we've not researched this? We don't have a treatment protocol for this? I cannot believe why. Okay, so the next question is, why has this not been a bigger matter? We all know why, right? Because it's happening to women and children. Do you think that this is a male problem? We would be sitting in this position where we're having... And you know who's leading the forefront on all of this discussion? Who's leading the forefront on this is TikTok and other social media platforms with people who, most of them, are coaches and victims who are saying there is something wrong. I just went to a seminar where the leading research experts in the world came to this seminar and they're just catching up. I have a problem with that. I have a very big problem with that. I know that a lot of you come and ask me, because you know I'm a psychologist, how can I find help? And the problem is because we're not being trained in it. That's the reality. We're not being trained in it. We don't even know what it is. We don't even know the languages you guys were all using. They don't know what hoovering means or flying monkeys mean. I am so mad today. I am so mad today because I was reading more of Don Hennessy's book, How He Gets Into Her Head, which, by the way, guys, you want a book that is amazing. I just heard somebody got to hear him speak, and they said he's amazing as person as he is in this book, How He Gets Into the Head, Into the Mind of the Abusive Male. And one of the things he says, this is the thing that he said. I'm talking about why we're not up on research in narcissistic abuse, why there's not treatment protocols for narcissistic abuse, cognitive dissonance, and the fact that there's real damage being done to every victim who's experienced this, who's been screaming, please help me, something's going wrong. And the best we can do is to tell these people, then just get out of the relationship. You should never have been in the relationship in the first place, then you need to get out of the relationship and things would go better. Excuse me? We can't escape everywhere and every person. It is pervasive. It's pervasive. So one of the things he said, and this is going to be startling, and I don't know if I'll get reported for using this word on TikTok or not. He said that the abuse that victims undergo when they meet an individual like this is so severe that it competes and exceeds the skills of a predator that's a pedophile. And we all know how dangerous pedophiles are, right? And the fact that they are very good at manipulating and coaxing and everything else about this. He says, Don Hennessy says, their skill set is more sophisticated than pedophiles. And why are we not talking about this? I just know a friend of mine who is being harassed, bullied at a criminal level, and she is not getting help. I've had to put security on my house when I wrote the book for fear that, because there have been death threats made against me by my ex-partner for me to feel safe. We should not live in a world that operates like this. Why is there not more concern for every single one of us who've been a victim? I just don't understand. So, yeah, you can tell today I'm on a platform. I'm just very upset. We need to get better at identifying toxic behavior. We need to understand that victims are programmed, they are brainwashed, they don't know when they meet somebody that they've met an extreme predator. They don't know that. And by the time they realize something is gravely wrong, they've already usually made some massive commitment. They have a child with this person, they are married to this person, or they have properties with this person. They have done something that has caught themselves into this relationship and they now are stuck. And what our best solution we can say to them is just get out. And then what happens is the abuser then begins to use the court system as a way to victimize them. Because the court system isn't prepared to handle this, then anyone else is prepared to handle this. Yeah. So I'm glad you're here. I'm glad we're talking about it. I'm glad this matter, we need to get louder about this so that this stops. We need to get louder about this. Yeah, it's awful. So, all right, I'm coming off my soapbox, and I'm going to hang out with you guys and take questions. For those of you who don't know who I am, I'm Dr. Carrie Kerr McAvoy. I am a licensed psychologist with over 20 years of counseling experience. I am full-time content writer, creator, author. I've just published a book on my own experience of narcissistic abuse called Love You More, The Harrowing Tales of Lies, Sex Addiction, and Double Cross. And I would love to have you guys support me by buying it if you can. I just got another great review, 5-star review, and said that it was one of the best books this person has ever read, which touches me. I spent 3 years on this project. So, but I am so passionate about all of us being rescued, all of us. And I agree. I'm watching the comments come through. I wish I'd never met mine either. I had no idea. I had just lost my husband of 31 years. I was widowed. I'd been married 31 years before I met the guy. So I met my ex online. He seemed like he was a professional, you know, whitened his teeth, wore cologne, opened my door. You can buy it everywhere. It's on Amazon, Kobo, Barnes & Noble's, Apple, you know, and in link in my bio directs you everywhere. It's on audiobook. I narrate it myself. I hired a studio to do that. And it gives you an intimate look at what happens, even when you're a professional like myself, how I couldn't see it. And here's the thing. If I was not able to spot it, and I had been working in the field over 20 years, and I still did not see someone toxic, then what does that mean for the rest of us? Seriously, what does that mean? You know, I know now I can go back and see it, but when you're in the throes of that, it's very hard to see that someone's dangerous. They don't look dangerous. They dress up. They're nice. They're polite. They love you like the way, at least it feels like, it's not real love, but it feels loving. You don't realize that they're already testing you. You know, one of the things that Don Hennessy, and he's in the police enforcement, he said that before they even meet you, they've already started grooming you. They are going to work on your language, how you conceptualize the world. So this is how my ex did it when I met him. He came and he'd been several broken relationships, and he started to tell me what these women had done wrong in these relationships. This one was dramatic. This one I never really loved. This one had her friends were more important than me. And this one, she lied. She wasn't honest. And so what am I doing? What I did was like, oh, well, I'm an honest person, you know, because you're thinking, hey, he's a nice guy. He's one of the best looking ones I've met thus far. And I've been dating a year and sometimes going out 2 to 3 dates a week, one time dates, you know, for coffee. And like next, and here's a nice guy, you know, and he's polite and he dresses up and he's really sweet. So you think you met somebody really wonderful. He talks about his values. He gives me a book. He knows I have, you know, religious beliefs. He gives me a book with religious beliefs in it. He sent me quotes. I mean, everything. Little did I know, guys, it wasn't real. It wasn't real. How many of you have met somebody that you think really is into your hobbies, really loves the things that you listen to and read, loves to watch the movies that you watch, really into pets, maybe they're a vegan or whatever, and you find out it's not real. This person's not any of those things. And then this is the more insidious part. So they work your way in through the love bombing. They get you to believe that you met someone like yourself. And then they slowly drop, once they kind of hear that your language is changing and that you're conceptualizing the way that they see things. So here's one of the things that they do is they get you to minimize your feelings. We had a big moment at Christmas where I lost my partner of 20, 31 years, and my late husband was really good at Christmas. He went over the top, bought me sweet, sweet gifts for Christmas. So it's my second Christmas without him. So what I did was I tried to order something special for myself. It's now a few days before Christmas. I happen to be with my new partner, my now ex. And I realized that the company I bought the thing from had sent a notice saying, sorry, it couldn't be fulfilled. So your gift isn't coming. I started to cry because my big gift that would have been like my late husband's gift for me is not coming for Christmas. My ex looks at me and says, are you going to let that ruin the rest of your day? Yeah, well, it may ruin the rest of my Christmas. That's how I was feeling. I thought, you don't get it. I'm widowed. There's not anybody buying me Christmas gifts. I'm trying to buy one for myself and making Christmas decent. And you're telling me this is a no big deal and you're worried it's going to ruin our day. So me, you know, I'm only 4 or 5 months into dating this guy and I like him. I think I love him. So I like buck up and make a good day of it and shut my mouth. So what happens there? And this happens to all of us. If you've been in narcissistic abuse, this has happened to you. Something happened. You were told that you're probably overreacting. It wasn't that big deal. And you were asked to sort of let it go, which put you essentially emotionally responsible for his or her feelings. Exactly. Don't be so sensitive. Don't be so emotional. Why are you making it? But yet, you also know this person is, God forbid something goes wrong for that individual, because if it does, oh, hell breaks loose, and you're supposed to be the most supportive, biggest, most caring person in the entire world. You know that. So here you're already being set up as, you don't really matter, you're invisible, but they are prime stage, always prime stage. So, but because we're caring and we're invested and we want this to work and we don't realize that we're being manipulated, we don't know that, we don't know that we've met somebody who's not real, we cave and we give and we adjust. We think, well, they're doing the same, right? They say they are. We think they are. We don't know that we're being on purpose groomed and set up. Groomed and set up. Hey, Jen, so good to see you guys. It's so good to see all of you that I know. I appreciate you coming back. And Sarah, it's so good to see you too. I appreciate that. So, yeah, it's toxic. And what really bothers me is that we blame victims for the problem. We say the victims are defective, that we're insecure, that we come from a string of broken relationships, that we've been traumatized. By the way, this is traumatizing. This is traumatizing. Extremely so. Extremely so. But we're told, you're traumatized. That's why you got... No, this person's traumatizing me now. And you, your culture, you're traumatizing me. Because I don't have space to be, you're not listening. I'm in trouble. You're not listening. I wish I had good solutions. I don't have really good solutions other than I think we're talking about this. I'm telling you it's real. What you're feeling is real. Your struggles are real. These people are dangerous. They're hurtful. They're, you know, it's living around them is devastating. It's traumatizing. I think that's one thing we can do, is at least validate each other. I think the other thing to do is that we can do what we can to change legislature and inform people, you know, to help them know this is that they misunderstood, that they're getting it wrong. I think it's wonderful that we have platforms like this. That's very helpful, that we can share information, we can band together, we can support each other, we can lift up the resources that are effective, that are good. We can discourage each other from places that are dangerous or harmful or worse yet, participate or it continues the misinformation, the propaganda. But yeah, we need to change things at all levels. I know you guys have talked about even at a government level. Absolutely. Absolutely. And you're right. How many people have we put in power for all the wrong reasons, and they end up being as toxic or more toxic than what we're living around in our own neighborhood? Exactly. Yeah, and we need to become more aware about narcissism, what narcissism is, what narcissistic abuse is, what sociopathy is, so we can understand each other better. We need to get our therapists trained. Definitely we need to get the therapist caught back up. You know, so there's so much needs to be done. So much needs to be done. So thank you so much, guys, for hanging out with me. So now I'm going to stop talking and let you guys talk. So let's talk about what's going on in your life, what things you'd like to hear my opinion about. Again, for those of you who don't know who I am, thank you so much for following me. I'm a psychologist. I have a PhD in clinical psychology. I have over 20 years of counseling experience in private practice. I also did 2 years in a psychiatric facility. So I've, you know, worked. Nowadays, I do a lot of blogging and writing. And like I said, I just put this book out on narcissistic abuse around my own experience, what happened to me just a few years ago. It's recent, what happened. And thank God I got to control the court. He's cheap. He didn't have any money, so I filed. He didn't even live in the same country as me anymore, so I got to file. He signed the papers. I know if he could have, he would have taken me for everything he could have. I know he would have, but he's lazy and he was moving on to the new supply. So that really worked out for me. Absolutely worked out for me. I'm so glad, Jennifer, that you are applying for a doctoral program and that you're passionate about it. There are some fantastic clinicians. If you want to know who I think are excellent, that you should look for where they're at and where they're teaching, DM me over on Instagram with the same handle. I'd be happy to tell you who I'm finding in the field who are experts. My program, and I went to a professional school. I didn't go to a research-based school. I went to a professional school. It's the oldest in the United States, and I didn't know it. It had a fantastic reputation. It still does. It brings in the leading experts to talk and teach classes. So here it is. In the 1980s, I got a full course on personality disorders from a person who had written a book and was aware of all the best theorists, you know, Kohut and Kernberg and all of the best, Masterson's work, all of that. So I was really lucky, because here's the scary thing, guys. People coming out of grad school don't even have a course on personality disorders. They don't. I had several. So, and then I worked with them as a clinician. So yeah, I have lots of experience. And then unfortunately, I have also personal experience with them. But yeah, you need to look for somebody like that if you're going to have therapy. But yeah, I'm excited that you're doing that. That's wonderful. We do worship. Anybody can DM me over Instagram, guys. I do, you know, if you guys have a question, like, how do I find therapy? Where would be a good group? Who do you know really is a great coach? Because I don't counsel myself these days. I'm writing, and I really would love support around my book. But yeah, so also, there's another great opportunity coming up, and that is April 6th, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time is a webinar, live webinar with two therapists, myself included, two self-aware narcissists, and two coaches. It is going to be for tickets. You can get a ticket and link in my bio. It is going to be amazing. So if you have questions about therapy, you have questions about maybe what's going on in our culture, you have questions about what's in the mind of a narcissist when they do these various things, that's the time to do it, because you can ask questions in that seminar. It's really, because one of the things that plagues us with cognitive dissonance is we want to know, how could someone be so toxic and do these things? I mean, it's pain for me. I don't know about you guys, but for me to do something wrong, if I know that you're very sensitive about something, say, for example, you have a new haircut and you're very sensitive about it, and you come in with a new cut and it doesn't look really good, it hurts me to say anything that would be hurtful to you. It hurts me. I can't hardly do it. If you ask me, what do you think? And I care about you and I love you, I'd probably say, well, it's an interesting style. And then they'd say, well, you don't like it? And I said, well, you've had better styles better. But in that moment, I it hurts. I don't want to do that. So what happens? Why do these people, anyone who does this kind of abusive stuff, how can they do it? How can they use this? And please don't tell me they don't know, because they do know. Because anyone who's lying and hiding and deceiving means they know right for wrong. Or you wouldn't, right? So when you actually are outside of it and you're clueless, you act innocent about it. You're not trying to pull one over on anybody. But toxic people know, because they're then deceiving you, and they're very good at lying. So that means that, yeah, they're up to stuff. So this is a chance for you to ask, what is going through your mind? Did it bother you when you did that? And I know at least one of them has admitted to cheating, you know, maybe both have, I don't know. I know at least one of them has gone publicly and said that. So if you have those types of questions, how could someone do this to me? What was going on in your mind? Did it hurt you? Did it bother you? Do you have guilt? This is the time to ask. See the link in my bio to get the tickets. It's going to be an amazing evening. And if you can't make it that night, there will be free replays for anybody who has a ticket for it. So I'm going to go back and try to catch up on any of the things, questions. If you have questions, put it in the Q&A, and I'd be happy to talk to you about it. And unwoke 62, I don't really know what your point is. Actually, that sounds kind of like an abusive comment, very dismissive, invalidating. One of the things I do here is I mute whenever I start to see that kind of behavior here. So I would love you to be here and be a participant, but I also want this to be a safe place for all of us. So It's going to be an amazing seminar. I really can't wait. I've done a couple of these. Actually, this is going to be my favorite. It's amazing. If you guys know the various panelists, it's going to be an incredible, incredible night. Oh, Daisy, there's a meetup for NARC survivors. How did that go? I'd be really curious to hear about that. So, Denise, you're in marital therapy and counseling. Is it helping? When you read my story, you'll see we tried several times. He actually weaponized therapy against me. We actually had a therapist who trained with Susan Johnson with emotionally focused treatment. But by the way, I think if you're just having a run-of-mill kind of problems with marital problems or a couple problem, emotionally focused therapy is fantastic. I highly recommend it, but it's not good with a narcissist. My ex is a narcissistic sociopath. It's not good. All it does is it gets you more into their head. Well, they're not showing up equally vulnerable. Now that I look back and think everything was said, he did not say anything vulnerable in that. He got into my head. We didn't get into his. Watch for that, guys. Watch for that. That's one of the big hallmarks of a narcissistic abusive relationship is they're very good at getting us to be vulnerable, to expose ourselves, share our stories. They seem very sympathetic. But if you listen, if you really stand back and listen, you're going to notice the same kind of transparency and vulnerability. If it's there, it's staged and scripted. It's not authentic. He told me lots of stories. I doubt many of them are true because they're pretty outrageous. One of them is that he ran away from home and ended up being like a milk carton kid. Really? It doesn't happen. I actually worked, one of my clients, that actually was true. He's a 7-year-old that had been stolen by one parent from another parent. Police found him and returned him. So I actually worked with somebody who ended up having his picture on the milk carton, but I seriously doubt that this person, that happened. He told another story how he fell into a hole behind school and nobody was going to come and he knew if he didn't get out, he was going to die. See, all of that like elicits sympathy. But the truth of the matter is he's not talking about real life, real time in this moment. He's not saying, hey, you know what? When I'm with you, I get really scared. I don't know how to show up. I'm afraid I'm going to say the wrong thing. See, that's what's not being shared. So watch for that. Watch how they'll get into your life, into your head, and your heart, but they're not sharing equally the same kind of vulnerability. Yeah. Yeah, it is. Yeah. We tried 3 different times, and each time, Swan, if you're having problems, just go ahead and ask them here. I don't mind that you're doing it. I am reading them. Sometimes it's not been unwieldy. I know I had a real high, when I was on my soapbox, we went up to 169 people here, but it's now back down to a more manageable number. So, trolls yesterday, I was on live yesterday and it got brutal. So today I'm not seeing a lot of trolls, which is really, really good. And I know I have a moderator here now, which is really helpful too. And if any of you want to be a moderator, I go live 3 times a week. I go, usually it's Tuesday, Thursdays, and Saturdays around noon Central Time. Today I'm out of town tomorrow. Today I had something going on at noon, so it's later. But I advertise. You'll notice I put it in my schedule every week on Sunday. I update for the following week. I would love to have you be a moderator. It would be awesome. I don't ask for a lot. I prefer people be muted, not kicked off. I don't believe in kicking people off. But if we do have somebody who's being disruptive, I do mute people. It was helpful, huh? I'm glad to hear that, Daisy, too. That's really great. That's awesome. I love that you did that. That's so cool. Did you advertise it, like, through the Meetup app or something? Or, like, someone organized it? I think that, wow, wouldn't that be great? One of the things we're going to be doing, I'm going to go ahead and start to tell you about it. I haven't announced this yet, so you guys are the first to hear about it. But there's a group of us, 14 of us, who kind of do things together. We collab a lot and call ourselves NARC Avengers. If you watch the hashtag, you'll see that. You'll see there's a group of us using the hashtag. And we're going to do regional meetups. And the first one is planned. It is for Dallas, May 21st, I think. Saturday and May 21st in Dallas. I don't know where in Dallas, and I don't have the time. But so far, right now, it looks like Trey... I was like you, Trey, myself, Maya, How to Love a Battered Woman may be joining us. Maybe Lee Hammack might be there. For sure, Kelly, lovely lady, I'm trying to think of her handle, but Kelly is Kowalski's going to be there. So yeah, I'm super excited, guys. So it's going to be the Saturday of the weekend of, I think it's the May 21st. We're going to do a World Peer and Live. We'll come and take questions in person. You know, we'll be having our stuff on hand, the merch and our books, and yeah, just to meet you and hang out and talk about stuff. I'm so excited. It's going to be a really great evening. Okay, I know some questions have come in. I'm going to look up my questions here. Doreen wants to know, yeah, lovely lady love, exactly. She's going to be there for sure. She's coming for sure. So it'll be me for sure, her for sure, and Trey is going to be there for sure. And then I'm not for sure who else may be joining us. Maybe several other people may be coming as well. Do I think complex post-traumatic stress disorder can cause borderline personality disorder qualities? So that's the first date, Tiffany. It's the Saturday of the weekend, May 21st. I don't know what time, and I'm looking for a large venue to host us. That's what I'm current. So anyone who knows Dallas and has a suggestion, or might be, I would love to do a coffee house. I think that would be cool. It's to kind of do like a mid-late afternoon at a coffee house. But all of that's still up in the air. We're still working on it. So. And I'm hoping, I would really like to do one over in the North Carolina, kind of Virginia area. I would like to do one over there as well, because several of us live in that area, so it'd be cool to do that. Maybe even, I wouldn't mind doing one in Canada. I know we have a lot of people from Canadians who are also, you know, here, you know, hang out with us. Because one of the other people who's really involved with it is stronger than before, Lisa. So we'll see. We'll see. Do I think trauma can cause borderline traits? Absolutely. Yes, I do believe that. I think that we don't fully understand what causes all sorts of borderline traits, but here's essentially the there is a core struggle with borderline personality disorder traits. And everyone, by the way, we all are on that continuum. Do not think they're us and them, because you're on the continuum. Because when you hear what their core struggle is, their core concerns, you're going to like, oh yeah, I get that. I struggle with that too. We all do. But what the problem is they have problems with controlling their emotions. They have a lot of dysregulated emotions. So the core issue is abandonment and engulfment. So they're afraid that if they get too close to you, you're going to overwhelm them, negate them. Now, how familiar does that sound to abuse, right? And if you're a victim of SA, isn't that what happened to you? You were engulfed, suffocated, overwhelmed, overtaken. You ceased to be. That's one of the main fears. The other fear is abandonment. So the fear is if I express myself, if I act like an individual and take risks and do that, you're going to reject me and leave me and abandon me. When you're an infant, this is absolutely terrorizing. Even as an adult, it doesn't feel good, but as an infant, it spells like end of life for you. So that is the twin struggle of a borderline personality disorder. The additional issue is that they struggle to modulate these emotions. It's very, very, they become so overwhelmed and buried in these feelings that they just kind of lose control. But everyone has these issues. It's a universal issues. But do you see how trauma can cause that? So if you've had a lot of trauma where you have been literally emotionally enmeshed or overwhelmed or lose yourself, and then you turn around and the minute you sort of say anything, you get rejected, dismissed, pushed away. Yeah, that's what happens with trauma. So I do think it can, that's been one of the struggles in the research, is how to kind of tease that out and to differentiate them. So it makes it really tough. It does really make it tough. So I'm going to go ahead and say that's, we've answered that. Another question was, what is mirroring versus real? That's a really great question. We all, by the way, mirror. Mirroring just simply is to say that I am resonating with your emotions and that my body's reflecting that emotion. So for example, if you're telling me something sad and I start to show sadness, signs of sadness, By the way, we actually have mirroring neurons. One of the way we know how somebody else is feeling is when we see the expression and on their face, the neurons in their brain mirror that. We actually sometimes will imitate that expression. And by the imitation of the expression, we know the feeling. We recognize the feeling in our bodies. And then we understand what's going on with them, which is how Botox, when you get Botox injections in your face, is kind of messing with that because you can't actually mirror the expression on your face. Isn't that wild? How it's, all of that's connected. So mirroring is simply a resonating with another person's emotional experience. But it's also talked about as far as some people do this deliberately. And I, as a clinician, was trained to do it, by the way. I'm very skilled at mirroring you. What happens is that if you notice, if you go and you sit down with somebody and they sort of turn towards you and they adopt your body position, like if you cross your arms, they'll cross your arms. You tilt your head, they'll tilt your head. And they'll make sure that they create what's called a closed circle with you. So if you notice, if you put your bodies, the way that your legs and your feet are turned and the way your bodies are turned, you close a circle. That creates rapid rapport. And then the other thing they do, and I also was trained to do this, is do a slight touch, like touch their arm or touch their back when you try to help them with something or something like that. All of that creates a sense of, it disarms us. It puts us kind of at ease. We feel more open, less guarded. We're more suggestible. We're more suggestible. I do it on purpose as a clinician because I know you don't have a lot of sessions. You don't have a lot of money. You want to trust me super fast so that we can get to the heart of what's bothering you. So I'm doing it in your best interest. People who do narcissistic abuse are not. They're doing it in order to get you to elicit support and admiration for them so that they can then abuse you and manipulate you. Yeah, so that's mirroring. Now, how do you know if it's real? Well, over time. Sadly, that's why a lot of people are urging you not to rush relationships, because with time, you'll begin to see it break down. You'll see the miss. People who are just mirroring and not authentically caring about you cannot sustain interest in you. They cannot sustain investment in you. So you'll see it drop somewhere. Maybe it's too long between texting. Maybe they'll blow it on when you're having a rough day. Maybe you'll set a boundary and they won't respect the boundary. There'll be something. Yeah, thank you. We don't talk about religion and politics or my looks are the three rules here. They'll do something that will drop they'll drop it. It won't be consistent. So watch for consistency and watch it over time. And here's the last thing to watch for. They won't show it to other people, especially to people who serve them. How do they treat the fast food cashier when they're checking out? I saw my ex lose it at the airport dealing with the person at the front, you know, one of the ticket people. I saw him lose it. You'll see them let it down somewhere else. And take note, because if they can treat that person that way, and this is a stranger, and you know people are a little bit better with strangers than they are with their people who are most familiar, they're going to be way worse with you. Way worse. So that's how I would tell you can distinguish it between real and non-real. Yeah, I don't know if this is the same. He says I dictate him. He's always wrong and no love. Yeah, that's a common problem with narcissistic abuse. Is it's a way to get into your head and make you think that it's you and not them. They make it's you and not them. April 6th is called How to Recognize and Overcome Narcissistic Abuse. It's a live seminar at 7 p.m. on April 6th. It's $20 of the tickets, and if you can't make it that night, there'll be free replays. It's amazing. It's going to be an amazing night. There's 6 panelists, 2 clinicians, 2 self-aware narcissists, 2 coaches. It's going to be great. You don't want to miss this. This is a common problem. I was just listening to Lindsay Gibson, guys. Lindsay Gibson wrote the book. Do I have it here? Yeah, I do. Lindsay Gibson's book is a bestseller, by the way. She's a clinician, another psychologist. It's called Adult Children of Emotionally Immature Parents, but it applies also to all relationships, not just to family relationships. She was saying, one of the things that she said was that's very dangerous is that in one of her books, this is the first book. She has a second book. At the back of the second book, she has what's written 10 rights to a relationship. like 10 rights, human rights, you know, think of the Bill of Rights. She said there's 10 rights we all have in a relationship. And one of them is that you are equally as important, your feelings are as equally as important as the other partners or the families or the parents. So what happens, though, is when we become concerned about not wanting to hurt someone else, we're essentially saying that how they feel matters more than how you feel. Because chances are he's or she's hurting you, but they're not being concerned about that, but you're concerned about hurting that other person. Do you see how it's not reciprocal, how it's not equal? Both of you need to show up for each other. Both of you need to be a lot concerned for each other. So if there's a failure of that, then you know this is a person who's very immature and who's toxic, who's harming you. This is abuse. So watch out for your own attitude of failing to see yourself as important. Because one of the things we do is we don't set limits around this. We don't say, you know what, this has gotten toxic. I'm not doing this. I'm not going to stay here while you yell at me and use names like that. This is one of the things, and this happened in my long relationship. My long relationship had some abuse in it too, I'm sad to say. And one of the things he used to do is he used to scream names at me. He was really awful. One day I remember I looked at him and I stared at him and I said, you know what? I don't know why you'd want to go to bed later and have intimacy with me after you just said I was all these things. Who sleeps with someone who's like that? And he just stared at me and they looked and they goes, you're right, they don't. And they never called me those names again. Now that shows somebody who's a little has capacity to change. For sadly, a lot of these people do not have capacity to change. But see, that's what we need to get into the place of thinking about. You matter. Your feelings matter. What you want matters, not just this other person. I never know if these are in order. So if they go out of order, I am so sorry about that. Why does he ignore me when we're with his friends? That's a great question. It does have, because, so let me ask it this way. When you walk out to, say you get a new car and you've spent some money. This is a car you've wanted a long time. It's really important to you. You go out and you get into it and you admire it, right? Oh, look at these seats. Oh, isn't that amazing how it turns back? Oh, I love how the sound in here is. It's really great. But then you drive to your friends and you're with your friends. Are you thinking about the car anymore? No. Not until you get back into it again, right? That's what we are. We're no more than an object or a tool to this person in their lives. And so when they're around other people who they kind of see and matters and need to show up and make a sale, that's what they do. But you become, you know, in the background. You just aren't that important. That's a sad thing. These people are broken. They don't see other people as people. They see other people for their usefulness to them, sadly. That's why he ignores you when he goes hangs out with his friends. Yeah, it's not where you're going wrong with him. It's where you're going wrong with you. And I say that with all of love and support in my heart because I am you. And this is what I'm learning right now. That you matter. You have 10 Bill of Rights. I wish I had them, guys. I will get them, and I will read them at the next live. You guys will cry when you hear these 10 Bill of Rights. I know that, like, really? I have a right to this? Seriously? Yeah, absolutely, you do. You do. So what's going wrong is it's nothing wrong with you, the relationship. What's going wrong is us learning to love ourselves. That's what's going wrong. The fact we've been taught, systematically taught, culturally taught to put other needs before our own. That's what's wrong. That's what's wrong. If I catch them in a lie and they act like I'm wrong, that is called gaslighting. Yeah, that's a common problem, is one of the things that people do to avoid responsibility is that they deflect. And, you know, imagine a three-year-old. Did you just eat the cookie? Well, you got crumbs all over their face. Nope, that's so, yeah, exactly. That's serious gaslighting. So that's a very common thing that happens. And so it's a way to get off and deflect. So this is how you get around it. And I was able to get around it with my ex. Know your boundary ahead and stick to it. So one of the things that he and I agreed that if he ever got caught talking to another woman, texting another woman, that it meant I had to do something, that something was going to change. I caught him. If you read the book, near the end of the book, I catch him. And I said, I remember we decided that this makes me, I have to do something. And by the way, he tried to gaslight me. He said, no, I'm sorry you have feelings about that. No, I said, no, I didn't have feelings. I watched you text somebody. You texted somebody. Well, it was my sister. I said, then you won't have a problem letting me see the phone. Well, no, you can't see the phone. Then that means you've done something you're not supposed to, which means now I need to make a decision. See, that's how I cut through it. Stay on point. Don't get distracted. Talk about the issue. If they, like, well, you should, this is another one he would do to me. You should have brought it up faster. I'm bringing it up now. Let's talk about it now. Something went wrong. Something needs to happen. This isn't okay here. So, but you know, you didn't bring it up. No, we're talking about it now. Something went wrong. You just stay on point like a broken record. Seriously, you stay on point over and over, but don't get tracked and down to, don't, even it, like, well, you're so sensitive. No, don't get into that. You just say, something went wrong. I saw you texting. We need to deal with this. I'm going to have to make a decision. You need to move out. You know, just stay on task. Stay on task. Tips to protect children from being influenced by narcissistic parents. Guys, that's a tough one. I mean, I'm sure what you're talking about is you're co-parenting with somebody and the person you're co-parenting with, and you don't have any control over that. You don't have any control over that. Those are one of those moments where I do a lot of this, unfortunately. What I would do, this is what you can do. You create a legal document. The way you create a legal document is you write it in black ink. Don't ask me why. I don't know why. I just know that my medical records are a legal document. This is how I have to record. So you can do the same. You can record record. Start a legal document. Put down time, date, and then who was there. And then tell exactly what happened. Do not give opinions, assumptions, or conclusions. So-and-so showed up at the house screaming these things. Then list what says. And then said, then turn around and drove away 10 minutes later. Kids were left crying. Then sign it. You do that every single time you create a document. Kids came home from the visit in a weird space. They wet the bed that night. Document it. You keep this record. You, like I said, don't say, they acted like dad scared them. No, you don't know that unless they said, daddy scared me. You can write that down. But don't make conclusions. So you don't want to say, he dismissed me. Well, that's a clinical word. Don't use clinical words. Use your words. Use the words were said. By you doing that, you're going to create a powerful track record of, oh, how they know that's not made up is you got times and dates and you've signed it. You can't, you know, can they just, they would have to prove that you, that's not real. And they don't, they can't, they'll say, so-and-so, you're dismissing this. Can you prove your record of what happened on that day? We have a record that this is the date that they actually showed up because you did these things, right? So help us know what happened. See, they can't. And plus, if you just have enough of a document, it's very powerful. That's the best that you can do. The other thing that you can do is create a safe space for your kids to be themselves with you, for you to not put them in the pressure of making a choice between mom or dad or partner and partner, you know, mom and mom or dad and dad, but that you create a safe space for them to be very vulnerable with you. Don't quiz them. Don't make them choose sides. All of that just is really, really helpful. It's sad that it is the way it is. I wish it wasn't, but that unfortunately, this is a way you have to work with. I know these abusers use a system. I know that, and I know the court doesn't seem to see that. I don't get it. My narcissist now says I and my children trigger him. Oh, he's getting ready to dismiss or just he's getting ready to just to discard you. Mine did the same thing. Mine walked around and said, I don't know why I don't find my wife attractive. And I knew, you know, I already know he was texting, I miss you, I love you to somebody else. So I knew it was coming. So what I would do is get ready for the discard. It's coming. And by the way, guys, if you can let them discard you before you discard them, it's better because they don't take being wounded or injured or insulted very well. That's when they get really dangerous. So I know as much as it's hard to be thrown out or rejected or discarded, it's painful. But you know what? It's been painful all along. None of this has been good. And for your safety, it's better if you let them do it to you than you doing it to them. Now, I'm not saying don't walk out if you're in a dangerous situation. I'm not saying that. I'm also not saying stay. But if you know this is coming, get ready. And it's better if you can let it happen than doing it. But I'm also not telling you not to do it, okay? Because I want you guys to stay safe, definitely. How do I avoid getting triggered in situations I can't avoid? Yeah, that's a tough one, Red Swan. That's a real tough one. First of all, control the situations you can, for sure. Also, I have a resource list, guys. It's in my link in my bio. It's called Mental Health Resources and Recommendations and Books. One of them is listed is called Daily Skills App, I think. It's something like that. It's very helpful. It's a weird name. I wish they'd named it something different. What I like about it is it gives you suggestions. Not only can you track what's happening to you, but it actually gives you suggestions. It separates from supporting yourself emotionally and then grounding yourself sensory-wise. Did you know there's a separation between those two? So when we get triggered, you're feeling it both in your body and you're feeling it mentally. So that you can ground yourself in both levels. One thing you can do is to soothe yourself is to go in and wash your face. You know, splash your face with some cold water or go wash your face with a nice hot washcloth. All of that really super helpful. The other thing you can do is to, you know, listen to something. Go sit and breathe and listen to something. But do something that kind of takes you out of your head. And then the second thing is for you to then show up for yourself emotionally in a sensitive way and to say, yeah, this is really triggering. Remember, you're here. It's not happening. You're here. You're still safe. Tapping. Great idea, Daisy. I love it. That's another great way. Tapping helps. So there are things that you can do. That app is very useful. It's not free. I think it's $7. I don't get any money for it. I have no affiliate links to it. I'm just telling you, it's very, very helpful. Yeah, definitely do something both sensory and emotionally. So something that gets you in your touch with your body, that you feel it with your body, and then as well as you do something soothing, validating, create space. One of the things that my therapist told me to do, and it was really helpful, she said to ask myself, is this an old feeling or a new feeling? Meaning if it's old, meaning it comes from trauma, that's something that I can show up and kind of mother myself around. If it's a new feeling, I generally can problem solve it because I'm an adult. I have lots of skills at my hands. Just asking myself that question really helped ground me a lot. There's another book. You're now reminding me of another. I think I do have it listed. It's called Getting Through the Day. The name of the author, and I don't have an example to show you, is called Napier. 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 She has it filled with exercises, very useful exercises. It's called Getting Through the Day. It's specifically for those of us who have problems with dissociation. We have problems with being triggered, with intense anxiety. It's very, very helpful. It came recommended to me by someone who is a trauma specialist, so that it's a very useful book. Sarah, yours asks you for advice on for new supplies. Oh my goodness. The balls of these people. I they continue to shock me. Don't they shock you? You guys saw the skit I did of mine. This was right. I knew the discard was coming. Yes, you spelled it right. Dia confans. Sorry, I can't say your name. What he asked me was, he showed me a text. His ex was texting him. Shouldn't have been texting him. There was a problem. His ex had been texting him. And he said, look, she said, I'm the best thing that's ever happened to me alive. You can see the smirking. I was laughing about this. I looked at him and I said, well, then she must not have met very nice men. There are a lot of really much better men than you. Because, by the way, he's a serial cheater. He and I broke up for a month. I counted at least 17 relationships he had in that 1 month. I asked him, and he said, yeah, that number is about right. Okay, that's when he was married to me. Can you imagine what he was doing when he wasn't married? We're talking like hundreds, thousands, you know? So anyway, I said, then she must not have met very many nice men. And then I looked at him and I said, because I will never say that to you. He he wasn't the kind, he would just think it's funny. You know, now I know you guys, a lot of you cannot say that. You know your person. You know your person. Do not do anything that's antagonistic. I knew he wouldn't do anything with, I think he'd think it's funny, you know. He thought I was probably full of shit. I don't know. But stupid. You know, the stuff they believe is amazing. But yeah, so that's regard to discharge. He uses his help against me, and he hasn't had help in years. Can you say more, common human, what you mean? I don't know. I will watch for your second part of that come in. He uses his help against me. Like, are you talking as therapist or like people who he hires? Or I don't know. So I need to have you say more so I can hear you say that. So I can understand what you're saying. I'm so excited. I'm right now in a big, huge continue education on narcissistic abuse. I'm 21 hours, and there's also another summit on it with some top people, and I never say her name. It's like Ramani Durasoli. She's one of them, and she talks about that there's 7 subtypes. She breaks out narcissism in a completely different way. She sees each subtype has a covert example and an overt example. And she's saying we're using covert narcissist in a wrong way. And so she's reconceptualizing the types and how to understand it. So I can't, yes, thank you, Chris. Yes, Durvasula. So Ramani Durvasula is rethinking that. And when I get into that, I will be absolutely share it with you guys. It's fantastic stuff. So Heart and Voice wants to know, I don't feel worthy the same as my mom. Yes, I don't either. I have a narcissistic mother as well. It is very, very difficult with people like that. I highly recommend Lindsay Gibson's work. I showed the book earlier. I'll show it again. It is Adult Children of Emotionally Immature Parents. Very, very good. That's Lindsay Gibson is her last name. Another book that I really recommend, and I know she does work with this as well, is The Emotionally Absent Mom. The Emotionally Absent Mother, her name is Corey, Jasmine Corey, C-O-R-I. And then, how can we not say Susan Forward? Susan Forward's book, Mothers Who Can't Love. Mothers Who Can't Love. Susan Forward is a prolific writer. She writes a lot about narcissism, fantastic stuff. I quote her a lot. I love it. So I'd recommend all of those books. It is tough. It is really tough. And they do leave you feeling like you don't count, that you're invisible. It is a sign that you probably had a toxic family if you struggle to know how to show up in relationships or even just show up in the world. Absolutely. Very common problem. Doesn't make it true, though. Doesn't make it true. Is there a way to talk to me longer? Feel free. You can always DM me. I don't want to get too caught up into trying to counsel anymore because I'm not... Can I counsel? Well, the problem is how United States licensed therapists. I don't live in the same state that I'm licensed in, so I technically can't be counseling. But I can refer you to really good coaches and other good therapists. I know that one of the people I consider, if you guys have somebody who's struggling with SA issues or sexual addiction issues, I'm friends with one of the best therapists probably in the United States. She's presented. She's a critical thinker. She's worked with treatment facilities. I was in therapy with her 3 hours a week for a year after I left my toxic serial cheater. I think the world of her. I can get you in touch with her. I can send you to other fantastic people. So yeah, if you want to, like, at least let me know. But please be aware that I won't be doing counseling. I'm not doing counseling these days. It's not where I'm at. I know I do education better. I do writing better. I also blog. I don't know if you guys know that. I'm on medium.com where I have like over 100 plus articles, not all on abuse. They kind of range on a lot of stuff, but I always write from a psychological angle. And also you can find it on my website. I've moved, the Medium is a paywall, so it's $5 a month. But if you want to read my articles for free, I have them over on my website as well for free. But thank you for asking me that. I feel that is a huge compliment. I always feel that's so touching. I appreciate that. So, mast cell babe, so good to see you here. I always appreciate seeing people come back. Is safe social media resource advice with a narcissistic ex? Yeah. Heavy sigh. You know, you can't limit them. And they can't, what you can do is if you know their profile names, you can block them, but often they end up taking profile names that we don't know. Is mine stalking me? Absolutely. How do I know that? Because mine bought my book the day that it came out. How would he know that? He doesn't even live around me. How would he know that? It's because he's following me. I know that. I had Google Analytics on my website, and when I was blogging, I could literally see where people were coming in from the world, and I know where he's living, and he also where he's living, they don't speak English. And this person was reading it in English in that area. That person stacked in more than like 13 to 15 hours on my website in a year, less than a year. Do you guys go hang out on a website for more than 15 hours? Really? Maybe Amazon, right? Maybe. But would you just like hang out at my website for 15 hours in a year? No, it's him. He would reread the same articles at 2 a.m. in the morning. Yeah, it's stalking, absolutely. Can we control that? No, we can't. What you can do is you can control your reaction to it. So what I've chose to do is now I don't look at the analytics. I don't. I don't want to know who's reading stuff where. Because I do, then it controls me. It makes me think, before I post something or say something, I think, should I post that? How could it hurt me? You know? Yeah, it's a good point, Sarah. Why stalk you? Here's the reason why. No, I'm not supply, but two things. One, they perceive you as being owned. They own you. I know that's weird, but that's how they think. So your scene is forever, even though they don't want you. I'm going to be really, really crude for a second. You may be trash to them, but they're still their trash. And they don't want anyone else around you, ever. They remember they have a shame core. Their core is shame, which they're totally out of touch with and are very unaware of. But in that shame core is they want to believe that you are better off with them than without them. So that's another reason they're walking. Mine was obsessed with my dating life, obsessed with it. How do I know? He wrote me and told me he was, you know, what a fucker I was and how wrong I was. I mean, it was crazy. It was my last contact with him before I blocked him. So I know he was reading my stuff because how would he know? He actually was quoting stuff out of my articles. That's how I knew he was reading my stuff. Plus, I had, like I said, I had analytics on it. So his preoccupation with me is he doesn't want me with anyone else, even though he doesn't want me. And they feel that way for forever. You're not going to ever be free of this person. That's the sad thing. It's like you have a permanent leech attached to you. So the best way to do this is just to cease to be aware of them. And to go on and live your life the way you want to live it while you do things to keep yourself safe. What have I done? I've hired an attorney for my book. I have an attorney ready should somebody try to attempt to sue me for my book. I have security on my house so that if someone tries to break in, I'm aware. You know, do be smart. Don't not be smart. Block them and take precautions, but then live your best life. I wish we could control social media. We can't. I wish we could. I'm going to go for another 15 minutes, so I won't be able to take any more questions. I don't know if I can get through these, but I will try. Do I believe my narcissist when says I can leave with the kids? You know, I don't know. I don't know him. You know him. I don't know her or him. I don't know who you're with, but I don't know her or him to know if that's true or not. It might be true. It might be because, you know, they don't really want to be parents. I mean, it takes time and energy and they have all their resources going to whatever, you know, maintaining supply. So it could be valid, could be part of the discard coming up, but you know, I know you know, your gut is telling you something. So I would operate on that assumption because chances are, test yourself. How often else have you had gut instincts on something and how often is it right? If you're operating order the 80% on it, then you have a really good gut instinct. I wish I could tell you, though. I don't know. Okay, so I'm stressed about trauma. How do I release it? I would recommend that you, first of all, have you had any counseling? I would recommend definitely, you know. By the way, back to social media, guys. You can always open a profile that you don't use your name. You know, and keep it private. If you're not a content creator, see, I am. I have to have a public face. So, but if you don't have to have that, just set up everything anonymous. You know, create another identity for yourself. Yeah, I understand the stress about trauma, and it is a process to be able to release it, to get better. Writing really helps a lot. It was very cathartic for me to write. You may find also talking to someone really, really helpful. I think a lot of EMDR, eye movement desensitization reprocessing. I said it wrong. Eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. I usually have somebody usually is on with me and who can tell me what the right word is, but you guys know what I mean. I would definitely do that. I also found group therapy very, very helpful. And there are some wonderful group therapies online that you can participate in that's really, really useful. And that app I was telling you about, that Daily Behavioral Skills app that's in my resource list, it's really, really useful as well as helping you sort of like, you know, desensitizing. I misspoke. For you to be able to get in touch with your sensory. Yoga is also very beneficial. Counseling is very beneficial. But there's lots of different ways that you could do that that can be useful. I'm sorry, I'm kind of jumbling my words now. I apologize. All right. So common human, you have a lot of questions that kind of came in together, and I'm going to take them all together. So you came into the country, or no, he came into the country. No, you came into the country and he helped you. And now when you complain of him lying, he says that you're ungrateful. And you married him to help him with his citizenship, and now you're having a hard time getting rid of him. So I put it in one big thing. What I would recommend is you get a very good attorney who also knows something about immigration and someone who knows something about family law, and find out what your rights are. Don't believe what this person says. By the way, when I was counseling patients, and patients would tell me what their partners were saying about the law, a lot of times it was wrong. A lot of times it was wrong. It was bad advice. They're doing it to scare you. So get legal advice. And a lot of times, you know, attorneys don't mind giving you an hour for free. Not all of them will, but a lot of them will. So sit down with somebody and find out what the law is in your state or your area, because it varies across the country. It varies across the world. So make sure that you do that. I agree with you, Claudia. She may face legal abuse, but don't assume he's telling you the right information. Yeah, don't assume that. Go find out for yourself the right information. But definitely also get support. Make sure that you talk to other people, like the fact that you're hanging out here and hearing all that's been said here. So I really appreciate that you're trying to get support that way. That's really awesome. Ma'am, it's 26. You want out, but he won't leave you in peace. That's common. That's very common. It's called ambient abuse. They tend to just tax us, wear us down, and exhaust us. Do what you can to create as much separation between yourself and this person. Blocking, no contact, your own living arrangements. Do whatever you can. I know you can't completely stop it. I know that. But do what you can. Yeah, isn't it amazing how they just are unrelenting? I find it like, it you know, the sad thing is, yes, it may be like a 3-year-old having a tantrum, but they're grown-ass adults with grown-ass resources. So they're very, you know, they're not, it's not as simple as a 3-year-old having a tantrum, for sure. So Doreen, you're a therapist, and he says I should be, yeah. You know, I'm a therapist too, and I felt like I somehow, because I believe in change, I should accept that his statement that he's trying to change means that he's really changing. No, it doesn't mean that. It's just another form of manipulation and gaslighting as a way to keep you thrown off and confused in order for them to keep the upper hand. So, yeah, I don't. It's just another form of sophisticated gaslighting. Nino says, my mom seems narcissistic but cares and is kind. How? First of all, we're on a continuum. She may have some narcissistic traits, but doesn't mean she's a full-blown narcissist. And so the fewer traits you have, or the less strong they are, then the more likely you're going to have, you know, self-reflection and empathy and all these types of things. That's totally possible. All of us have narcissistic traits. The question is how much and to what degree. So for you, it will come back to where is she the most toxic to you, and how can you rein those in so that they're not so harmful to you? And maybe also, maybe the other thing, I'm kind of thinking on my feet right here, maybe the other thing is for you to become aware of how not to let her kindness and caring make you fail to see where she's not so kind and caring. Make sure it doesn't inoculate you so that you're blind to the places where she can take advantage of you. So be careful about that. Yeah, Muddy Mega is saying the same thing. That she, yeah, it's common for that to happen. They'll do whatever they can to advance their cause, absolutely. Weaponize therapy, they'll weaponize other relationships. That's why flying monkeys come in and be so difficult, because they're weaponizing everything that they can in order for them to stay. Do I have the dates for our Narc Avengers meetup? I have the first dates. It's the Saturday of the weekend of May 21st. I think that's May 21st. So it's going to be that Saturday, and it's going to be in Dallas. We're going to, at least right now, I know possibly three of us. It would be myself, Trey, and a lovely lady, Love. Maybe Mental Healness says he might be coming. Maybe. We'll see. He's busy. We'll see. And there may be a few others of us coming, of the 14 of us that do a lot of collaborating together. So we're also getting ready to put a website up so that we'll share all our counseling, how you can get a hold of us, how you can schedule a coaching session with us, what other kind of resources we have, our materials, our merchandise, our books, all sorts of stuff like that. So I'm super excited. It's not live yet, but it will be soon. We're going to have a website, so that'll be great. This is a great question. I'm going to just now pick through the questions that seem to be a little different than the ones we already had. So not that I'm meaning to ignore anybody, but just because of the time. I usually only do an hour, and today I've already been here almost an hour and 15 minutes. So is there a covert that doesn't love bomb? Like I said, Chris, you're going to have to remind me of the name again. Ramani Duravasula. I know I'm massacring her last name. I know I am. I'm embarrassed. Anyway, she says that there's 7 subtypes of narcissists, and each one of them has a covert manifestation and an overt manifestation. Another way to think about it, yes, Ramani Duravasula. Another way to think about it is overt is the kind of the grandiosity, and the covert is whenever they feel deflated, like they feel wounded or fragile. So they can fluctuate back and forth between these two. You can have somebody who's very grandiose, and then suddenly something happens and sets them back, and they're going to present as more of a covert. So the subtypes are things like the communal or vulnerable narcissist. That may be a narcissist who doesn't do a lot of love bombing. That's my mom's type. They're the do-gooders of the community. They tend to serve on boards, and they're in the helping profession. To the forward-facing, to the public, they seem like the perfect person. Everybody's like, aren't you the luckiest person in the world? But the people who are living with this person knows that that's not what they're like at home. My mom would give out all day for her patients and show up and be amazing, and then she wouldn't even hardly be aware. This is a true story, sad. She sent me to school with pneumonia. I was 7, and no one was aware that I was running a fever, and I had been sick for weeks, and that I had full-blown pneumonia. This teacher recognized it when she saw me fall asleep because I was that sick, and sent me home. And my mom chewed me out all the way home from making her come pick me up. She took me to the doctor because I was that sick. We didn't go to the doctor because we were poor and we had no insurance, so we didn't do that. But that's how sick I was. They paid for a doctor's bill, and the doctor looked at her, I'll never forget, and said to me, first of all, he asked, do you want it in liquid and pills? Well, in my family, we had to be big and stoic. So I said pills, even though I didn't know how to swallow pills because I knew the wrong answer was liquid. It mattered in my house. It mattered. So I said pills. And then he looked at me and said, well, if your mom wasn't a nurse, we would hospitalize you. That's how ill you are. He didn't know that I went home and everyone ignored me. And those pills made me sick and I vomited because I was allergic, and no one noticed that I was roaringly sick from the pills. That's what I grew up with. That's what a hero communal narcissist is like. They're great to the public and they're shit at home. I was severely, severely neglected. Severely. So Yes. Does my mom love bomb? No. I've never seen her love bomb anybody. But, you know, doesn't make her easy to live with. Doesn't mean I would want to live with her, you know? Yeah, great to strangers, just not great to family. Yeah. So, yeah, there are subtypes. There's lots of subtypes. Like I said, there's six or seven of them, and it's very different. They present very differently from each other. Somebody said, I heard this, and I want to disagree. Someone said last night, do all narcissists cheat? No, absolutely not. I think that's gravely misleading. Not all cheaters are narcissists. Not all narcissists cheat. My mother, are you kidding? She has ethics. My mom is a highly moral person. She doesn't see where her morals fail her and her consistency with her family, but she lives by a code of ethics. She would never, I don't think she even looked twice at somebody. So there's a lot of people who are narcissists who are not cheaters. I do not see the correlation at all. Yeah, do some cheat? Yeah, absolutely. Some of them do cheat, and they cheat. My ex did. He would be what's called a sexual narcissist or a somatic narcissist. So yeah, there are subtypes they cheat nearly 100%, but I would not say just because you have narcissistic tendencies that you cheat. So, and not all of them love bomb either. Yeah, my throat's giving out. So I will do one more question, guys. I know a lot of you ask questions, and I'm not going to be able to get all to them. I'm trying to ask, take one that's different and from someone I haven't talked to yet. So Nicole's, I'll take your question last today, and then I will go ahead and we'll end, but I'll be back on Tuesday, okay? And thank you so much for hanging out with me today. How do we stay in reality and not in their delusion? Oh, man, I love this question, Nicole. Thank you so much for asking that question, because that is what's happening. What's going on behind the scene is this person has, like I said, a very fragile core, very, very fragile core, and as a result, shame-based. In order to protect themselves so they don't deal with feeling so, like, completely overwhelmed by it, is they create a delusion. They create a fantasy. It's literally like the best fantasy you've ever seen on a TV show. And they live it. They live it in their head. They live in this fantasy. And then they pull you in as characters. That's the problem. You're not a real person ever. You're only a caricature in this fantasy. And as a result of that, then they want you to act it out. Well, we don't know we're signing up for a role. Second of all, we don't know, have the script. And third of all, it's impossible because it means we're not really ourselves. So that starts to break down, and then as it breaks down, they then get tired of us, get ready, and get rid of us. How do you stay in the reality? This is the thing to watch for. Watch what they do, ignore what they say. Literally, it's turn the TV station off and just watch the behavior, and then let the behavior dictate what you're going to do. So, for example, they're, oh, baby, I love you. You're the best thing ever. And then they don't text you all night long, and they're out past when they said, that love? No, it's not love. That's disregard. Certainly callousness. They might be doing something that would actually offend or hurt you. That's really not love. So what would we do when somebody treats us with less loving behavior? Well, we then protect ourselves. We're less vulnerable. We share less. We start to emotionally detach. Maybe we start to reconsider the relationship. So that's what I mean. Watch what they do. Ignore what they say. That's what I didn't do. If you read my book, you'll find out I was not good at that. I had been used, because of my own childhood history, of used to hearing all these inconsistent messages. Oh, my mom's a great person. She really loves you a lot. You're so important. You know, they don't ignore seven-year-olds with pneumonia. They don't. I'm sorry. And they don't notice that they don't ignore the fact there's seven-year-olds vomiting for hours on end because they're allergic to the medication. I would be alarmed, right? I would like, oh, wow, it starts 2 hours in and it ends 2 hours, you know, ends 6 hours later. Could it be the medication? Come on, we're all bright enough to put that together. So ignore what they say and watch what they do. Hey, you guys, it has been so amazing. Thank you so much. This actually was my busiest live ever. I couldn't believe we hit 160 today. 7,000 likes. Thank you so much for following me. I appreciate it so much. Thank you for checking out my book, for caring about the webinar that's coming up on April 6th, and that you're excited about the regional meetup with us. I'm so excited too. You guys are the best. Have a good weekend. I'll see you on Tuesday. Bye-bye.